Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. In a distinctly weird, unusual contest based on the situations and kind of the progression of the night, the Warriors lost 105-99 to the Utah Jazz. Not a big deal. Klay Thompson sat. They had nothing to play for. But it was certainly interesting, compelling. Durant's continued return, Steph Curry returning from a knee contusion and playing well. And I talked about it with Adam Lordson of the Fast Break blog, frequent friend of the show. And we talked for about 20 minutes about the game and a little bit looking forward to the playoffs, which are coming up. And this episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. You can check them out, SeatGeek. Perfect place to buy and sell tickets. And if you use the promo code LOWARRIORS, you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Going through it at the time, you know, being in the building, that was a supremely weird game for a basic reason. I tried to articulate this in my piece for The Athletic, but not knowing the plan or anything like that, you could easily go through the first three quarters of the first three and a half quarters of this game and think, well, the Warriors were maybe not actively trying to win like zealously, but we're getting after it. And then all of a sudden, with about 5 minutes to go, it completely turns.
Yeah, it was a very strange moment, too, in the fourth quarter when it turned, because we've seen enough strange lineups from Kerr this season and last that there was a moment where you said, oh, no, what is he actually trying to do here? Is this a lineup put on the court with the idea that it will actually succeed at playing basketball? And it became pretty clear as the game went on that that was not the purpose of the lineup, that it was serving other goals for the team. But it was a strange finish to what had been, at least in the third quarter, a pretty competitive game.
Right. So it was, I think it was about 5:13 left, and that was right around the time Curry often comes in a game. He had already played 30 minutes, and so you're kind of sitting there going, well, why is he playing more? And the game was close. I think it was a 3 or 4 point margin, and so you're sitting there, and the Warriors called a timeout. So you're kind of going, okay, well, where are they going to go with it? You know, they had played, Durant had played about 32 minutes at that point. Draymond played 24, which is more than he played against the Pelicans. And Klay sat, so that was there. And then they trot out McAdoo and McGee together, and then eventually Zaza Pachulia joined them. And so you're sitting there going, oh, okay, that's what this game is. I couldn't have known that before, but now I know.
Yeah, the McCaw, Clark, McGee, McAdoo, West lineup, and then the Pachulia variation of that. I haven't looked at the numbers to see if those lineups have ever been on the court together before, but it was an interesting way for Kerr to essentially clear the end of his bench and assure that there was nobody really among the starters or even the immediate reserves who was at risk of being injured in this game, which did turn pretty physical for a bit in the third. So, you know, I can understand that justification. I can understand the minute caps. I also think there's something to be said for the fact that if the Jazz are going to be a second round matchup for the Warriors, you don't want to show all your cards this close to the playoffs in a fourth quarter tight situation. There is sort of a mental component to that that I think could have been a slight factor in play. If you really wanted to be a conspiracy nut, you would say that the Warriors somehow hope to influence the 4-5 matchup going on between the Clippers and the Jazz at the moment. But I really don't think that that was part of the play.
I don't think so either. And what was so strange about it was it would have been easy and justifiable for the Warriors to punt this game. You know, they could have done that. They sacked Klay Thompson, kind of thought, yeah, they'll keep it in a reasonable level. And it was not only the distribution of the minutes, which was certainly part of it, but the team played with more effort than usually do in a game that doesn't matter. Like, this is a game, to be abundantly clear, it did matter to the Jazz, at least until the Clippers ended up winning and securing the 4 seed, but that happened at the same time. There were contemporaneous games. The Warriors had nothing to play for, and the Jazz did not play their full complement of guys, so it's not like the Warriors were really getting that test other than seeing how they fared against Rudy Gobert. And George Hill was out there for, I think, a little bit over 20 minutes, which was over his, he only played 18:44. So it was strange in that way too, because you're not getting that, you know, test. It's not iron sharpens iron or anything like that. I guess they just had a different vision for what they wanted to do in this game, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that was actually kind of the big takeaway for me. That was, I guess you could call it encouraging after the game, was that Coach Kerr talked about how, at least for Stephen Curry, this is exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted him to play his normal rotation for three quarters and then just sit him for the entire fourth, regardless of what happened.
Yeah, and I think that the reason why they didn't just punt this game entirely has a lot to do with Durant and also the nice kind of ride that Curry's on at the moment. You don't want to chill Curry here, so you don't want him to be in a game that's completely meaningless or to sit him unnecessarily for a number of games. And you want Durant to get enough touches at normal game speed against decent competition that he has to go through the decision-making thought process, that he gets back up to speed with the game. And so by playing with a certain amount of intensity for the first three quarters, by having Curry and the normal rotations in there, I think that they serve those goals. Durant, I think, got some of what he needed. He's still a work in progress getting back up to speed, but there were definitely encouraging signs tonight. And Curry had a fantastic game. And given how physical the Jazz were playing him on defense, it was really encouraging to see him get open, get free, and get his three-pointer off the way that he had in previous season.
It was especially notable. I'll go through his stat line just so it's out there. 28 points, 9 of 16 from the field, 6 of 8 from 3, 4 of 5 from the line, and 4 assists, 1 turnover. There were moments in this where it looked more like MVP Curry just in terms of the shots he was taking, and considering at least one of the two missed threes he had was ludicrously ambitious. Like, it was one of those plays where he didn't really have anything and just went after it and took the shot. First of all, doing those kind of things against George Hill, who's one of the better point guard defenders in the league, is notable, though Hill was not on him the whole time. But also just having those moments, getting them closer together, is a positive sign, because something that was a major takeaway for me in the first half of this game was that the Warriors just, the offense worked when Curry was on the floor, and broadly speaking, it did not when he was sitting.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the offense worked not just in terms of getting Curry open three-pointers. It also worked in terms of penetration, getting guys to the basket. They generated a lot of good shots when Curry was on the floor. When he wasn't, and some of that time they were trying to move the ball from Durant, I think they suffered a bit from Durant being out of sync and making some poor decisions with the ball. There's so many options within the Warriors' offense that you have to make a split-second decision of, do I pass the ball to Zaza Pachulia, or do I pass the ball to, you know, Draymond Green or Stephen Curry or Klay Thompson? And Durant was just making the wrong decision in some of those option situations. And he'll come around. It's just a timing thing and getting reacclimated to the team. But that was one of the things that stuck out as one of the obstacles to the offense when Curry wasn't on the floor.
Yeah, I've classified this broadly as kind of rust versus recovery for Durant. So rust is just not playing for a while. And there are things that you can't replicate, either just doing scrimmages or just not playing at all. And then the physical recovery, something that, you know, sitting next to Nate Duncan helps with also, because he's dealt with lower body injuries, is we were talking about the difference between straight line ability and lateral. And so with the MCL sprain that Durant had, his straight line mobility, or straight line speed is probably a better way of putting it, was that recovered more quickly. And you could tell that in this game. His straight line stuff was actually pretty good. He had a drive with a nice finish. He had two dunks. He had two drives and dunks, and then he had that transition play. But he did look slower and more tentative when he had to do the other elements of the game. And that's not a concern. That's just the way things are.
Yeah, I think that it's natural for there to be, like you said, the recovery time. And they're putting him in good situations to get back up to speed. Portland, whatever you think of their sort of quality as a team, it's going to be a pretty good matchup, I think, for Durant. He's going to have situations where he can exploit mismatches, and he's not going to need to be at the peak of his game. So you're essentially going to give him probably this 1 week here at the end of the season and 2 weeks for a playoff series to really get physically where he needs to be before the Warriors start hitting tougher competition. And that's just about ideal in terms of the physical recovery time that you could hope for here.
Yeah, that's about right. Gobert is actually the player that I've used before as a calibrator for this, because he had an MCL grade 2 sprain, I believe it was in December or January of last season, so 15-16. And it took him about 2 weeks after he came back to be all the way, you know, back closer to 100%. That's what I've used as the kind of the line for Durant the whole time. Their bodies are different and everything else like that. But it is a reminder that you have this part of the process that needs to just grow into it, that you can't be all the way back when you step back on the floor.
Yeah, the thing that I'm encouraged by, it doesn't look like Durant's being tentative. It doesn't look like he's feeling pain. So all of the things that you worry about if somebody was coming back too early, I don't get the sense, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I don't get the sense that he's really facing that. So the playoffs last year, there was a sense that Curry rushed back as quickly as he possibly could, and that may have hindered his mobility and his sort of comfort out on the court. I'm not feeling or sensing, based on Durant's play, that we're dealing with a situation like that here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But before we move on, I want to take a little bit of time to tell you about SeatGeek. This was an unusual game to attend. I mean, there was actually some of the drama was just not knowing the circumstances, and you could see the crowd getting a little bit amped up, and then everything that shifted when they brought in McAdoo and brought in JaVale McGee. And if you want to experience the Warriors or any other local team, Giants and A's are back in action now, or other things, concerts, theater, you can do it through SeatGeek. SeatGeek is my personal way for buying and selling tickets, because it is a great place to primarily to buy, and that's really what you think of with selling, because they are an aggregator, so you only have to go to one place to try to buy tickets, and because they have a great tool called DealScore. And what DealScore tries to do is it tries to combine ticket quality and ticket price to give you the best options among the things that you could be looking at. So they can't tell you if you want front row center, but they can say, hey, if that's what you're looking for, these are the best seats for the best price. And so both of those things put together save you time by not having to search as many places, and save you money by finding you the best deals and putting everything, as I said, in one place. If you want to check it out, you can download the free SeatGeek app. That's SeatGeek. And you, under the settings tab, you enter the promo code LO Warriors for Locked On Warriors. And they just give you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So you go about buying whatever it is that you were interested in, concerts, theater, sports, and they will give you $20 on your first purchase. It also tells them that you came from us, so hopefully they'll keep advertising and we can keep moving forward. But again, you check it out. It's SeatGeek, SeatGeek, and then the LO Warriors promo code. One other point I wanted to make about Durant, this is something I was reflecting back on a piece that Kevin Pelton wrote before Durant returned, and he commented that when you have an MCL sprain, assuming the guy comes back, you know, in the proper period of time, almost everything recovers, but the one piece that does lag in the data that he used to research was three-point shooting, and that is really the one thing that, other than rust, that does look a little bit off with Durant. And it's not his selection or anything like that. It just seems like he's getting himself right.
Yeah, and I think that bared out in the way that the Warriors struggled at times this game too, with it. When you have open three-point shooters in the Warriors' offense and they're just missing those shots, it does deflate the offense a little bit. It takes some of the momentum out. So Durant was 0 for 5 this game. Clark was 0 for 2. And so right there, you have two of the players that you would expect within this Warriors offense to get a lot of the open shots, given the way that the gravity of defenders flows across the court. And they weren't converting those. So I think that one, as you point out, is something that may lag in Durant's recovery. But two, it's also one of the reasons why the Warriors may have struggled to really get separation in this game during the first three quarters.
That was also where Klay Thompson's absence was felt most strongly. You know, he can be so reliable at hitting those shots, and transferring those to Patrick McCaw is actually somewhat different than when McCaw was replacing Durant, just because of the difference in their offensive roles. And you don't want to read too much into that. It's just a different thing. If Klay Thompson missed extended time in the playoffs, the Warriors would have to deal with that, just like they did with Steph last year. And fortunately, that's not the case. He was just DNP rest here. They wanted to go in that direction. But it was a reminder of how important he is. And also, George Hill's reliable shooting on catch and shoots is probably something that would be shifted if Klay Thompson was there to have some different defensive assignments.
Yeah, it's a good point. Klay's absence, while not something that jumps out, definitely was felt in the stat line of this game, both in the Warriors' efficiency and the ability of the Jazz to get off shots that Klay typically wouldn't give up.
Was there anything else in this game that really stuck out to you that you feel like the story of the game is incomplete without mentioning, other than James Michael McAdoo hitting a corner three?
Sorry. McAdoo threatening my health here with his threes. I'd say that Draymond's game was an ugly one. It was a mess offensively. He took a bunch of bad shots. He got frustrated, got into it with the refs again. I had some decent defensive plays, but wasn't a huge factor there. So just one of those games where probably Draymond has difficulty modulating the speed and the intensity with which he plays, and he was just in a bit of a funk. I wouldn't read too much into it, but I think part of the storyline here was Draymond wasn't particularly good tonight.
He was also 1 of 4 from three in that. I think that was in the Pelicans game where he was shooting him more reliably, and you kind of wondered, oh, is he figuring it out? And it's still unclear. You know, it's not definitive one way or the other, but the Warriors are going to need that. And the other thing that reminded me of the other thing I wanted to discuss, which is this was the third time, I believe, that these teams played. Obviously, the last time of the year, because the Warriors only have one more game, and it's against the Lakers. But as far as I can recall, Kerr did not go to Draymond at center at all when Rudy Gobert was on the floor in any of these three games, and if he did, it was very short. That is not devastating in any way, especially considering the stakes of this game in particular, but if these teams play in the second round, that is one of the avenues to negate some of what Rudy Gobert does so well, as long as you're willing to handle the trade-offs on the other end. And I understand why you don't want to play all the cards, we talked about that a little bit earlier, but it would be nice to have an idea of whether that worked or not.
Yeah, I got the feeling that was just one of those where Kerr's going to trust that Draymond could do it when the time comes. I think that given the flow of the game and given the way Draymond was playing, that he probably didn't really see upside to that matchup tonight. But in a 7-game series, I'm confident that the Warriors can find a way to exploit that and try to drive Gobert off the floor a little bit by creating that mismatch. But he's a force, Gobert. He's better than he was last year by a pretty significant margin. And the Warriors are kidding themselves if they think he's not going to be a factor in a playoff series. So they definitely, I think, saw something tonight. And they're going to have to do some work on it if the Jazz are their matchup in playoffs.
Right. And offensively, he's so much more capable now. He always had potential just because of his length, and he moves pretty well for his size, but he has converted that into actual production, getting in the right place at the right time, also getting putbacks and lobs and everything like that. But he is a much more complete player now than he was before, and he's a better defender. He's still limited in that way in terms of being out on the perimeter, and I think there are ways to exploit it, but it'll be harder to do this year. It's going to be really more on that end than saying playing Gobert on the floor, that's like tying one of your offensive hands behind your back, which was true to a point the last couple of years.
Yeah, and the Warriors saw tonight that there are situations where Gobert's just swallowing everything down low, that if the shot's missed or if the ball's thrown in the general vicinity, he's obviously big enough to get an arm on it or get a hand on it, but now he's skilled enough around the basket to really convert that into points. So you can play those mismatch games, but I think he's in a position to punish the mismatch in a way that he wasn't in previous seasons.
One more quick thing I wanted to bring up. It was also notable that Kerr went back. It might have just been for minutes rotations, but Durant played with the nominal second unit at the beginning of the fourth quarter. He did not do that in the second. And I didn't think there was anything spectacular one way or the other there, but that was one of the elements of an earlier part of the season. That was really before New Year's, but it was a lineup that was out there. I think it was Clark and Livingston. So Clark kind of in the Klay Thompson spot, Durant, Iguodala, and David West. And that was very similar to something that they did earlier in the year and ended up moving away from, but vaguely interesting to see that it happened in this one.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see that with Thompson back, because I think swapping Thompson for Clark obviously changes things. Livingston, West, and Iguodala have come up so far since the beginning of the season, the first quarter of the year, or half of the year, when we were seeing that lineup, that I think it has the potential to just be really deadly for opponents once it's at full speed, if all those guys are clicking. Durant could be a bit of a creator in that lineup as well, along with Iguodala, so it'll be an interesting test for him. But given the way that West is moving the ball, given the way that Iguodala continues to be able to move the ball, there's just so much flexibility, both on offense and defense. I'm looking forward to seeing that lineup, particularly when Durant is back fully up to speed.
I would also consider kind of going with a hybrid lineup, and you, instead of replacing Clark with Thompson, replace Livingston with Thompson and have a little bit more shooting on the floor. You don't need as much creation from that spot. And I think Livingston has played well with Curry on the floor. It's not the end all be all of it, but I'd like to see if that worked.
Yeah, you just have so much versatility right now. And the injury to Durant was interesting because it limited the Warriors bench, but I felt like it also gave them a bit of stability in terms of what they were using because they were so limited on the bench. Now that Kerr has more choices, he obviously is going to get to run a lot of different things out. I worry a little bit, though, that that's going to lead to really so much scrambling of what's done on the bench on any given night that we may not see a core group form the bond and the momentum that we'd want. But you know, we'll see. I think that he has a clear idea of who his key playoff players are going to be. And the rotation will probably shorten up a bit once we get there.
I would expect that it will. And also how Kerr approaches the whole thing, not only in terms of Durant's minutes, but in terms of whether they're going to ramp up during the playoffs or just kind of start hot, because they certainly respect the Blazers after this, you know, even though it was a five-game series, it was a hard-fought five-game series last year.
Yeah, and the Blazers team this year, I think, is better than the team last year. So if they were scary last year, I think they have the potential to be even scarier this year.
They need to figure it out a little bit if Nurkic is going to miss time, but we don't know that yet at this point, so we'll have to play breather. Anything else you feel we need to discuss? I think we've gone pretty far in this weird kind of, not a throwaway game, but almost a throwaway game.
Yeah, it's amazing to believe that we're one game from the end of the regular season. It's been an eventful year for this team, but I think that the real fun is just about to start. So they've put themselves in a fantastic position for a huge playoff run. I just hope that they can capitalize on all this potential and bring it into reality.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks as always for having me on.
Thanks again to Adam Wardson for taking the time. You can read him at the Fast Break blog, which is run by the San Jose Mercury News. And you can also check him out on Twitter at GSW Fast Break. That's GSW FASTBREAK. We'll have a fun episode tomorrow, have the guest lined up, but of course have not recorded it yet. And then we'll have a recap of the Lakers game on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. I might actually watch that game after the fact just because of all the other stuff that's going on the last day of the regular season, and Warriors-Lakers is not high on the list of important NBA storylines on the last day of the season, considering the Warriors have locked up their seed, and while there is some drama with the Lakers, there's a lot of other stuff going on. So I don't know exactly when it'll be, but it'll be that, and then I'm already talking with Eric Gunderson of Locked On Blazers about doing a series preview of that. So looking forward to seeing where all of that's going to go. If you want to provide feedback for the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com or at DannyLarue on Twitter. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. I do not promise to respond. I don't always have enough time to do that, but I do promise to read it because that's only fair. And if you want to support the show, lots of good ways you can do it. You can leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. You can spread the word by word of mouth, internet, real life, whatever makes you happy. You can also subscribe, download every episode, and you can check out SeatGeek, SeatGeek, my personal place for buying and selling tickets. And if you use the promo code LOWarriors, you can get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Doesn't cost you anything. You get to try out an app that I do personally use. I used it long before they were a sponsor, and you can check it out. Support the show, LO Warriors. Thank you so much for listening. Talk to you tomorrow, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.